listening to Full Power Living with Eileen Dillon.
You know, on this program, we've talked a lot about the stress of modern life that leads us to anxiety, fear, and the conditions and illnesses that can result from stress itself. Today, we're talking about the surprising causes of anxiety and panic. And my guest, psychologist Victoria Bentley, has a message that it's not necessary to live with ongoing anxiety. Welcome to Full Power Living, where we're helping the world to realize and work with the importance, power, and mastery of human emotions. And we welcome your questions and comments, as usual. We have chats on blogtalkradio.com, on emotionalpro.com, and you can call us toll-free at 888-498-0570. That's 888-498-0570. And you can talk directly with Dr. Victoria Bentley. Well, Dr. Victoria Bentley is a clinical psychologist who has treated anxiety disorders for 40 years. She founded and directed the Phobia Center of Marin, a treatment center for anxiety disorders in Marin County, California, that's right above San Francisco, from 1980 to 2005, for 25 years. More recently, working in conjunction with Rotary International, she established the Congo Healing Program and set up trauma healing centers for war victims in Eastern Democratic Republic of Congo. She's a native of California and practices in the San Francisco Bay Area. She's also at Dr. Victoria Bentley, V-I-C-T-O-R-I-A, B as in boy, E-N-T-L-E-Y.com on the World Wide Web. And she's author of The Surprising Causes of Anxiety and Panic, Why You're Not Getting Better After Trying Everything. So, Dr. Victoria Bentley, welcome to Full Power Living.
Well, thank you, Eileen. Thank you very much. I'm so delighted to be here today.
Great. Well, your work for many years has been with anxiety disorders and panic. And I'd like to start with an idea of how extensive this problem, what percentage of Americans actually struggle with anxiety disorders in your learning?
Well, I think about 10%, which is really quite a few people. It's anxiety is the number one mental health problem in the world, really, not just the United States. Although the United States, we tend to be anxiety prone, as are the British. Yeah.
Because we repress ourselves all the time, no doubt.
Well, and we're not very touchy. That's another thing. Yeah. That goes with being anxious.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, touch releases anxiety.
Yes, it does.
Is what you're saying. Yeah. Okay, so what are some, we're talking about anxiety disorders. What are some of the disorders, and how can somebody tell if he or she is afflicted with an anxiety disorder?
Oh, good question. Well, anxiety is normal. I mean, it is a body's natural response to some kind of threat. Where the body feels threatened, psychologically you feel threatened. And so anxiety will come up, and anxiety in healthy doses is experienced as maybe tightness of breath, or your chest gets tight, maybe rapid heartbeat, butterflies in your stomach, and a sense that something's not quite right, a sense of ill ease. And that's normal anxiety, and I think most everybody listening anywhere would realize that they've experienced that at some time or another.
Right.
But it becomes abnormal when it starts to interfere with your functioning, with your ability to get on with your life. If it interferes with your work, if it interferes with your relationships, one manifestation of anxiety is phobias, and people stop being able to do things. They can't drive on the freeway. They can't go up in elevators. And, I mean, these things may seem small, Like, I'll have clients come in and say, everything is just fine in my life, except I can't drive on the freeway. And everything is not fine in their life. And particularly
right.
if they have to drive to work, you know.
Well, I remember when I first came to the San Francisco Bay Area in 1968, I think it was, I was hunting for a job, and I drove across the San Francisco Bay Bridge. And I was so terrified. I went ahead and did the interview, but I came back and I told my husband, I'm not crossing that bridge because it terrifies me. So, you know, I really know what you're talking about. Now, according to the Anxiety and Depression Association of America, and you say this also, anxiety disorders really are highly treatable, but they say that only about a third of those suffering from anxiety disorders actually receive treatment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What's that about? Why don't we get treatment?
That's a really good question. Well, first of all, when people start having abnormal anxiety responses, when let's say they can't breathe, they can't catch their breath, or they can't swallow, or many times they'll go to their physician, they'll go to their family physician, and there was something like an average of four or five doctors they can consult. People with anxiety will consult four or five medical doctors before they actually begin to realize that the anxiety is being, it's not a medical issue. And
mm-hmm.
so that's one reason. Another reason is a lot of people don't seek help, particularly men. In our culture, men are supposed to be strong. They're not supposed to be frightened. They're not supposed to have panic attacks when they're doing manly work. I had a woman client who was housebound, and I would go to her house, and eventually we got her out of the house, and she started walking around the neighborhood and eventually completely got over her agoraphobia. But in the process, I got to know her husband pretty well, and he was a lineman. He would climb the poles for PG&E, and we were talking about anxiety, and he said, "Well, I don't know. I have panic attacks every time I climb up to the top." So
oh, my gosh.
And he was working under those circumstances. So sometimes people feel they shouldn't be anxious, and they push through it, but that usually just makes it worse.
Right. We had a medicine person from Seattle who wrote a book saying, you know, essentially her message was, you've got to pay attention to the small signals so that they don't develop into big signals. And I, as I'm listening to you, I'm thinking, well, one reason may be that we don't listen to those small signals and believe that there's anything we either need to do about it or can do about it. So would that be part of your message? Listen to these small signals and do something about it, because you don't have to suffer like this.
Absolutely. Absolutely. That's the key. The key is to understand that this anxiety it's there for a purpose. Anxiety has meaning and purpose in your life. And it's your body's way of protecting you, trying to tell you that something's wrong. And so the first thing is to key into it and stop and say, okay, what's going on? Where am I feeling threatened? What's off balance? And once you do that, then it's much easier to tune into the smaller. If you can catch anxiety at the lower levels, when it's at the level of the butterflies in the stomach or the tight chest, then mm-hmm. you can manage it. You can manage it very easily when you tune in at the lower levels of arousal. But I think what you said earlier was that what we do is we just kind of ignore them. We ignore these early warning signals that the body's giving us. And you say, oh, well, I've just got to go to work anyway. Or, oh, well, I shouldn't feel this way. And we minimize them. We don't listen to them. And and then, of course, they escalate. And then once they start to get up there on the higher levels, you have to just kind of go through with it.
And then, now this is important to me, then it seems, this is my observation, it seems that we then believe that it's something happening to us and we have to get help, like from a doctor or a medication, because we can't handle it, when in fact it's self-generated from the beginning? Is that
exactly?
What's your comment on that?
Exactly. Uh-huh. Yeah, we think that we're going to heal it from the outside, when in reality, healing anxiety is an inside job. It's about you taking care of yourself, you sitting down, honoring the symptoms, instead of seeing them as the enemy or that your body's betrayed you, that this is something horrible you have to get rid of. Instead of doing that, you sit down and you actually understand that your body is your best friend. It's there for you 24/7, 100%. Everything it's doing is to maintain your survival and your well-being. And if your body's saying, watch out, you need to sit and listen to it.
Mm-hmm. So one of the things, as we've, on this program, as we've looked at fear and not as much anxiety, but fear is, you know, part of anxiety, it seems that, you know, our fear response was developed for human beings to keep them safe from the proverbial saber-toothed tiger. And we don't have saber-toothed tigers anymore. So a lot of our stress is actually self-generated by what we imagine or remember or won't let go of. Is that your experience also?
Well, yes and no. We do have saber-toothed tigers. They're things like the news, nonstop negative news, traffic, toxic bosses. There are actually a lot of saber-toothed tigers now. It's just that the difference between us and, say, the zebra, there's a wonderful book about why zebras don't have anxiety, is that we ruminate on it. We think about it. A major part of anxiety, that what keeps it going, is the what if. Well, what if this happens again? What if I get on the freeway and have a panic attack? What if I can't get to my job interview in the East Bay? Then I won't have a job, and then what will happen? You know, it wasn't the bridge that made you anxious. It was your fears that manifested.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
We do it to ourselves. We create our own saber-toothed tigers with our thoughts, with our catastrophizing. What if this gets worse? What if I'm all alone? What if I have a panic attack? What if I go crazy and they put me in the mental institution? And people, by the way, never go crazy from a panic attack, ever. It just feels like that could happen.
Now, I know that in this book that we're talking about, The Surprising Causes of Anxiety and Panic, you're not giving real solutions. But what if you are a person who does that? Could you give us an overview of what do you do when you're doing all those what ifs? How can you stop that?
Well, I mean, this is the beauty of being a human being. And this is really what makes us unique among other animals, is that we can actually see the problems that we have. I mean, the first step is awareness, and that's why I wrote this book, is that I want people who are having anxiety to be able to see what's causing it. It's not just coming out of the blue. It's not like an alien invasion that you have no control over. It's something that you're doing, something in your environment that's causing it. So the second thing that we can do that makes us different from the zebra is that we can say, okay, I'm doing this, and this hurts me. I can see that when I start thinking about, oh, my God, what if something horrible happens, that I start to create anxiety in my body, that I'm actually creating an anxious state just with my thoughts. Because the body will not, it doesn't discriminate between a real threat and a made-up one. if I'm telling myself that something horrible is going to happen, my body's going to go, oh, okay, let's get ready. Let's take care of ourselves. So I'm going to speed up my heart so that I can get more blood running into the muscles. So my heart goes faster. And then I start to sweat a little bit. And then what the anxiety-prone person will do will go, oh, my God, I'm starting to have a panic attack. And then the whole thing is rolling. And the trick is to catch it early, as you mentioned, and to reverse that process, because we can calm our body just as easily as we can stimulate it. And, you know, there's so many wonderful ways to calm ourselves now. I mean, relaxation is one, listening to calming tapes. Also, mindfulness is wonderful, wonderful way to stop that negative roll, that negative snowballing.
You know, one of the things over the years as a psychotherapist that I've learned to do is to say, okay, what's the worst thing that could happen here? And I imagine the whole scene all the way to the end, and then I ask myself, can you handle the worst thing? Can you deal with the worst thing, Eileen? And if the answer comes back yes, then I say, well, then there's nothing to worry about, nothing to be upset about. Just go ahead, and if anything, if the worst happens, then you can deal with it. And that helps me.
Yeah. Well, that, you know, I'm writing another book, and the second book is 10 Easy Ways to Stop a Panic Attack in Under 3 Minutes. And
oh, wow.
I know. I kind of laugh when I think about it because it's true. You can do that. And it's you do the same thing that you're doing with your thoughts, but you do it with the panic attack. Okay, what is the worst thing if I have a panic attack? Well, if I sit here and I start screaming and I'm in public, well, then I don't know anybody here. Or maybe someone will come to help me. But ultimately, getting over anxiety problems is to not be afraid of the symptoms anymore. And you just dare them to do their worst. That's one intervention. You just dare them. One of my clients came up with that. She challenged it. She ended up on the side of the road at night, her worst fear in the world, alone, thinking something terrible is going to happen to her, alone on the freeway. And she said, well, if I'm going to have a panic attack, I might as well have one. And so she just said, okay, I'm going to have a panic attack. And she waited and waited, and it never came. I know,
that's
it's great.
That's very good. Right?
Challenge it. But, well, yeah.
This is a really interesting thing that you're pointing out different ways that you can handle it, because one of the things I came across as I was preparing for this show is that the ADAA, which is the Anxiety Association, says that people with an anxiety disorder are 3 to 5 times more likely to go to the doctor, 6 times more likely to be hospitalized for psychiatric disorders, and that it uses up our medical resources, costing the U.S. more than $42 billion a year, which is almost one-third of the country's $148 billion total mental health bill. So So you're also talking about saving us a lot of money if we can use these 10 easy ways, aren't you?
Well, yeah, and I think what's happened, I've been, like you said, I've been in practice doing this for 40 years, and the trend has been more and more to treat this with pharmacology, with medication. And the problem is that medication doesn't solve this problem. Anxiety is way too complex. It's a holistic problem. It's involves your whole life. It involves your whole body. You can't just take a pill and make it stop. But if you believe that medication is the way and medication doesn't work, where does that leave you? It leaves you with an addiction much of the time. Or alcohol, because particularly with social fears, we medicate culturally with alcohol. But
so it sounds to me like it leaves you with two addictions. You still have the anxiety issue, and now you have the addiction to alcohol or pills.
Right. Yeah. And if it's not helping you, then you're really in trouble. Then people really get catastrophic thinking, oh, my God, I'm really crazy. Oh, my God, I'm going to have this the rest of my life. Oh, what if I never get well? What if I lose my husband? What if I lose my job? What if I lose my children? All these terrifying thoughts that would terrify any of us. You know,
that's
why it's so important. What I didn't really elucidate too much was that what we have different than other animals is that we have this new brain, this frontal lobe that can actually go in and intervene and say, wait a minute, I'm having anxiety symptoms, but number one, they won't hurt me, and number two, if I just sit here, they'll either go away or they'll peak within 3 to 5 minutes, and then they'll go away.
Mm-hmm.
Once you understand that, then it doesn't have to escalate to the level of there's something really mentally, emotionally wrong with me. And
that sounds wonderful. Yeah.
Does that make sense to you?
Yeah, it does. And also, we're up to our first break. So I'm going to break in right here, Dr. Victoria, and I want to remind you who are listening, call us at 888-498-0570 if you have a question for Dr. Victoria about anxiety. And also on our section coming up, we're going to be exploring why one child in a family can develop anxiety disorders while others don't. Why is that? We'll be finding out when we return here on Full Power Living.
That emotionally, children form the foundation for their life during their first 7 years? Most adults just repeat that early emotional learning, good or bad, over and over for the rest of their lives. If you want to give your child an opportunity to live an emotionally masterful life, then join me, Eileen Dillon, also known as the Emotional Pro, for a free one-hour teleseminar on what it takes for your child to become an emotional master. You'll discover important things like what emotions are designed to do for us, 4 things it's vital for parents to tell their children about emotions, and the single most important thing to do when someone is feeling emotion. Register now at RaiseIncredibleKids.com. The time has come for us to allow emotions their rightful place in our lives, as the tools and helpers they're created to be. Find out what you need to know in order to give this vital information to your children so they can live emotionally masterful lives. Go now to RaiseIncredibleKids.com for your free Emotional Mastery Teleseminar.
All right, welcome back. You're listening to Full Power Living, and I remind you to call in now to talk with Dr. Victoria Bentley about the causes of anxiety and panic. Our toll-free number is 888-498-0570. That's 888-498-0570. I have a couple of announcements. Next week on Full Power Living, I'm talking with researcher Chuck Ehrlich about 2 seldom considered chronic and progressive medical conditions, lymphedema and lipedema. That these 2 syndromes currently affect 10 million Americans and counting, and they most often develop in conjunction with treatment for cancer. So Ehrlich and his fellow researchers have written a comprehensive guide for dealing with these conditions through nutrition, and we're discussing that problem and what can be done about it right here next Thursday at 9 a.m. Pacific time. So please invite your friends and family to listen too. And we have many wonderful shows scheduled for you. So go to our homepage at emotionalpro.com, click subscribe, and we'll put you on the list so you get notification of our upcoming shows and events. Today, I'm talking with Dr. Victoria Bentley, who founded and directed the Phobia Center of Marin in Marin County, California. And Dr. Victoria, you also established the Congo Healing Program and set up
trauma healing centers for war victims in the Democratic Republic of Congo. To me, Marin County and the Democratic Republic of Congo must be two very different places. So it must have given you an opportunity to see both the similarities and the differences in the way people deal or experience anxiety. Can you tell us something about what you learned?
That's a big question. Well, I've learned that people all over the world are anxious, and how you treat anxiety depends on the culture. The United States, we're very cognitively based. We think a lot, and we ruminate a lot. And Congo's an oral culture. It doesn't even have a body of literature. So they don't grow up with books. They don't grow up learning about life through books. Conversely, they grow up learning about life by living in the environment in which they they're raised. And it's just so different. Let me see if I can articulate it more clearly. For example, here in the United States, it really helps to do a lot of psychological education. That's where you where I begin, so that people can understand that what anxiety is, that it really can't hurt them, it's there to help them, and then give them ways to manage it. Well, you know, in the Congo, I didn't speak any of the native languages. The women that are sexually abused, raped, and then traumatized there, they speak native languages, which, you know, I would have no way of learning how to speak. And so the therapy that we do in the United States here is language-based, really, mostly. Although for the trauma work I do, we don't do talk therapy. But what I ended up doing in the Congo was doing emotional freedom technique or trauma tapping technique, the tapping. And that works really, really well. And they like it a lot. I also taught them how to breathe, because when people are really traumatized like these women have been, I mean, these are situations that we don't have anything like in the United States.
Right.
I mean, there's terrible brutality. And, I mean, the thing you were saying, well, you think, well, what is the worst thing that could happen? And that doesn't work there, because in the Congo, the worst thing has happened. You know, their husband has been killed in front of their eyes, or maybe their child has been killed. They have no one to take care of them, and they have five children who are starving. I mean, these are the worst things. So the cognitive doesn't work too well there. But the breathing helps, so that they soften their abdomen, learn to breathe into their abdomen instead of high in their chest, and then the tapping. So those two things work really well in the Congo, but it wouldn't work so well here because we want to understand. We want reasons, and, you know, that's the difference.
That's really very interesting. So let's move on here. Suppose there are four sisters and brothers in a family, and as adults, only one of the sisters develops an anxiety disorder. And it's the same family, so why don't all the siblings develop anxiety disorders?
You ask good questions.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Well, there are many, many factors that will lead to an anxiety disorder, and it's a combination. And no two people have the same combination of factors. I mean, research has shown that children growing up in the same family, growing up together, will have more differences. That the family environment creates actually more differences between children than if they're separated, say, twins or separated at birth. So the ones that grow up in different areas, these twins, they did a lot of research during World War II when twins were separated, you know, at birth. The ones that are grown up apart, raised apart, are more similar than the ones that are raised together. So the first thing is that families create more differences between children than they do similarities. Mm-hmm. And the second one is that children are born with different temperament. And some people are just more sensitive than others. And they come out of the womb more sensitive. It also depends on the emotional disposition of the mother during pregnancy. If she's in a highly stressed environment, maybe she's getting a divorce, maybe they've had to leave their house, and the mother is really stressed, then she's bathing her baby in stress hormones, and that child will tend to be more reactive when it's born. It can be, not always, but it can be more reactive to the environment around than the other children.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have just situation of birth. You know, one may have a sibling that beats up on them all the time. One may be the apple of their father's eye. And, I mean, all these things contribute. It's complicated.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's a combination of factors. That's why I say that there's no one pill that's going to fix anxiety, because it's
right.
It's a whole person phenomena.
Mm-hmm. You know, that's funny that you say that families create differences. I realized some years ago I had an older sister about 22 months older than me, and I was noticing a difference between us, and it occurred to me that she came into the family and she operated however it was that she operated, but when I came in, I watched what was going on with her and went, well, I'm not doing that.
Yeah.
I'm going to do this over here. And it was just like, that's how the differences get created, is you go, well, that's not working very well. Let's try another way.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And, you know, parents are in different situations with different children. You know, with maybe older child, they're struggling, you know, to get their feet on the ground financially, and maybe with the fourth child everything's a lot easier, and then the child has the other siblings to look at, and but there is something. If for example, my agoraphobic clients, almost always they will have a parent who's also phobic, very fearful. It's learned too. I mean, they're physiological predispositions, but they're really minor. It's the learning within the family, how you deal with stress, how you deal in relationships, you know. And
mm-hmm.
we learn that from our parents, by watching our parents.
You know, I really saw that when my son was 4. He was bitten right under the eye by a dog when we were visiting in a household that, you know, that where the we were unfamiliar with the dog.
Mm-hmm.
And I explained to him that he was the right height to look squarely into the dog's eyes. This was after he got the stitches. And I took him back, and he forgave the dog. And it was very interesting that he did not develop a problem with dogs. In fact, insisted that we take on a dog a couple of years later that had a reputation for biting small children, and he tamed her. He loved her into stopping. So,
wow. Yes. Yeah. Well, you did a good job with him.
Well, it just strikes me, you know, that's one way of reacting. And what you're talking about is, I could have panicked and, oh, that's a terrible dog and we're never going back there again. And,
exactly.
Oh, you poor dear. And, you know, I could have done it another way too. You know, interestingly, I had a really rough childhood, and when I was reading your book, you were talking about PTSD, and most of the time we've thought of PTSD as occurring in situations like you were describing in the Congo or in wartime, where we mm-hmm. either feel totally, our lives totally threatened, or we see somebody we care about killed or something like that. But I was really interested because you were talking about PTSD developing from childhood trauma, and every single one of the childhood traumas, the sexual abuse, the beating, the yelling, the belittling, all of that, were things that I experienced. And I must have lived with PTSD for a while, but I want you to know it made me grateful that those things no longer have a hold over me. So thanks for writing about them.
You're welcome. I really, really want people to understand that the problems that they may be having are not because they're weak or just that way, or, you know, there's reasons. And more power to you to having healed that. And, I mean, it's possible that you healed it by becoming a therapist. You know, I know
well,
I healed
sure.
my wounds.
Yeah.
I had traumatic childhood too, and I healed
right.
mine by becoming a therapist, by understanding it in the same way that your
yeah.
son understood that your dog wasn't a bad dog. The dog wasn't a bad dog. It was just a dog that, you know, that happened to bite him because of his height, you know.
Right.
And understanding is huge. It takes
yes.
the victimhood away. You know, it gives us tools, a sense of control. Well, okay, well, if this happened because of this, well, maybe I can do this to help myself.
Uh-huh. Yeah, and so that, I think, is a really key thing that that brings your message home, which is that I can help myself. And if I can't do it on my own, I can get help.
Exactly.
And that's what's really important is that, you know, Victoria, one of the ways that I think I've probably told you about that in the past, one of the ways that I see this is that our Earth is a giant school and we've all come here to learn and grow. So if I have an issue, I start looking for, okay, what do I need to learn here? And the minute I learn it, it's over. And that's what you're talking about with anxiety too. If you learn that there's a cause and it's not your fault and
mm-hmm.
you can do something different, then it'll be over. Is that correct?
Yeah, exactly.
Good. All right.
Yeah, it's a message of hope. Absolutely.
Uh-huh.
You know, I used to have panic attacks and, you know, they really crippled my life. I had social phobias. I just don't have them anymore. And when I do have anxiety, I catch it right in the beginning and say, okay, this is my wonderful body, my best friend who's here for me, trying to save me and keep me alive and healthy and happy. Okay, what is it trying to tell me? What's off? What do I need to fix? You know, is there something in my relationships? Am I overworked? Do I have an illness? Maybe I need to go to the doctor. I mean...
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and then suddenly there's solutions rather than faced with, oh, I must be mentally ill, you know.
Right. Yeah, that's a big, wonderful thing. So instead of thinking there's something wrong with you, you think, oh, I have a project I need to do, and I'm going to get to work on it and roll up your sleeves and do it. You bring up panic, Dr. Victoria, and how are panic and anxiety related?
Well, anxiety is just lower levels of panic. And if you ignore anxiety, I mean, like I said, there's the normal anxiety. Like before a speech, you might get butterflies in your stomach, or you get, you know, nervous, or before a race or something where you're gearing up, you want that adrenaline. You know, raising small kids,
mm-hmm.
you need adrenaline. Getting a job done at work, you need adrenaline. But once it goes beyond that and there's a problem and you don't address the problem, the symptoms will come up. They escalate. They want you to pay
mm-hmm.
attention. And,
right.
I mean, literally, anxiety will bring you to your knees until you start to pay attention.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And
one of the ways I look at that is that once the universe brings up an issue, it doesn't leave you alone till you get it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And there's a spiritual component to this too. I mean, in
oh,
what
good.
You were saying, I mean, I have come to believe that this part of ourselves, this wounded part or this frightened part, it particularly if you've been traumatized, it's sacred. Those are sacred wounds. And healing them is a sacred process. It brings us, we're probably closest to ourselves when we're in touch with those wounds. And
now, what do you mean by it's a sacred wound? What does that mean exactly? I'm not sure I know.
It means that in healing that wound, we're on a spiritual journey. It's a spiritual journey to heal our inner wounds. It's not
great.
It's not done by taking medication. It's not done by doing calisthenics, you know. It's done by going inside, and exploring inside, and finding. Oh gosh, here we go. Finding the divinity in ourselves. I mean, these wounds. I mean, you know, I'll see if I can speak for myself. I mean, my inner child that was so traumatized by the shaming, angry mother, I mean, I hold her in high esteem. Because by having that, by having to go there and deal with these feelings of fear and shame, and that I'm a much better person. I'm capable of compassion because I've suffered. You know, there's an Indian proverb, never trust someone who hasn't had a great loss. You know, that in healing these parts of ourselves, we actually become better people, more compassionate, more human, more loving. Yeah.
I love that. I love that point. We're up to our second break, Dr. Victoria. Mm-hmm. So Dr. Victoria Bentley is my guest today, and we're talking about anxiety and panic and how you don't have to live your whole life with those, and we'll be talking more when we return here on Full Power Living.
Is it for you to ask directly for what you really want, to take responsibility graciously and willingly for your mistakes, or to relate with others because it's fun instead of because you need something from them? Most people believe manipulation and codependence are normal behaviors for adults. They may be common, but they're not normal. Manipulative behaviors really are designed to be part of childhood, to be put away as things of the past when we become adults. So, if you're ready to let manipulation and codependence be part of your past, then get the mini course I've created for you, Ending Codependence, The Bottom Line. I'm Eileen Dillon, the Emotional Pro, offering you a formula that you can follow for creating healthy, manipulation-free, and lasting intimate relationships. I also give you the tools and principles that you can use to develop lasting immunity to codependence. Get Ending Codependence today at www.emotionalpro.com. That's emotionalpro.com. Welcome back. If you're just joining us, my guest today is Dr. Victoria Bentley. She's the author of a three-part book series on anxiety and panic, including the book we're discussing today, The Surprising Causes of Anxiety and Panic and Why You're Not Getting Better After Trying Everything. You can call us at 888-498-0570. Don't let anxiety get in the way. So before we dive into this, Dr. Victoria, I know you can get that you have made a point that you want people to have this information. I know you can get a copy of your book on Kindle for only $2.99. Where else can people get a copy of your book and the ones that are upcoming also?
Well, on my website. The book is also for sale on my website. drvictoria.com. drvictoriabentley.com. com.
Good. Okay. Mm-hmm. And, you know, one of the things I really liked is the Kindle version allows you to insert links. So if there was a study or further information about something you're discussing, your reader can discover more just by following the links. And I don't recall having read a book through Kindle that had that, and I really like the feature because you can get the authoritative source in addition to yourself for what you're discussing. So thank you for putting those links in.
Yeah, you're welcome. I think it's great, too. I think Kindle's amazing, what you can do with it.
Okay, so this is part of a three-part series, and the first one is the surprising causes of anxiety and panic, and the second one is 10 easy ways to stop a panic attack in under 3 minutes. What's the third one going to be?
Actually, the series is going to be longer than three. I'm also working on a workbook that I'll put out probably within the next 6 months. And then my idea is to write a series of small books, little like 99-cent books, on how to desensitize very specific phobias, how to get over a fear of driving on the freeway, how to get over fear of flying, how to get over, like, small animals. A lot of people are frightened of small animals or insects. Just little books on how to. They're basically desensitization. It's a process where you go step by step on how to desensitize them. So that there'll be a series of those. I don't know how long this series will be. I'll probably just keep writing them until I can't write anymore.
So people really need to stay connected to you through your website to follow when the next ones get released, which I think is a good idea. I'm not sure that everybody understands. I want to go back to PTSD. What's the mechanism for us to understand of how PTSD gets formed? And I'm looking particularly, say, at a child who may have had some kind of violation or violence perpetrated on them or sexual abuse by an adult or even a parent. How does PTSD develop in a child like that?
Well, first of all, usually childhood trauma is just really becoming a known phenomena. Actually, children weren't even considered to have emotions until relatively recently. And
that was true in my childhood.
Yeah. You whack them and they'll get over it. But now, more and more, they don't usually put PTSD and childhood trauma together. In other words, PTSD is usually caused by a discrete or several series of events, and then the symptoms are like intrusive memories or flashbacks. Now, childhood trauma, they can have these. If it's serious enough, they'll have flashbacks, and particularly with sexual abuse with children, many, almost all women who've experienced this, many of them have difficulty with sex as an adult because they'll get flashbacks and they don't want to re-experience what happened when they were children. So childhood trauma is really separate than PTSD, but it has characteristics of PTSD, symptoms of PTSD. But how it's created is that we learn by by kind of a process of elimination. You know, like we remember, the body remembers things that happens to it. The body's conscious. This is a whole new concept too. The body has memory, but it doesn't have words. It can't put things in words. And trauma is experienced in the right side of the brain, which is nonverbal. So these experiences are remembered in the tissues, in the cells, in the organs of the body. And then when similar situations happen in present time, they come forward to say, watch out, be careful, this could happen. It's reminding you that this happened so that it won't happen again. Make it more clear?
Keep going.
Yeah, it's fascinating. It's so fascinating that the body, I mean, the most preeminent scholar of PTSD right now is Bessel van der Kolk. He's a MD psychologist who's written a book called The Body Keeps the Score. And that's exactly what happens. You may not consciously remember it, but your body remembers everything that happened to you. And until you resolve that, it will keep coming up to sabotage you over and over again. And it feels like sabotage because here you are, you're 35 years old, and you're supposed to give a speech at business, and you know it's going to promote you, and you know your subject, and you're so excited about it, and then you have terrifying anxiety. You can't talk. You freeze. You know, this is extreme, but it's an example of what happens, because maybe you've been shamed as a child. Maybe every time you opened your mouth, someone said, oh, you stupid, you don't know what you're talking about. And those memories, your body remembers the shame. Your body remembers how humiliating it was. So it tries to protect you by keeping you from speaking.
You know, that's really interesting. I'm a member of the National Speakers Association. And almost 20 years ago, I was working with myself on allowing myself to feel loved, because for most of my life, I felt like I didn't deserve to be loved and I was unlovable. And I had worked on it in my marriage and with my children. And I had an opportunity to give a 10-minute presentation before the local chapter in San Francisco of the National Speakers Association. And I had a number of friends. I was on the board of directors, and I had a number of friends. And when I got up on the stage, they applauded me before I even opened my mouth. You know, they were trying to give me support. Mm-hmm. And right in the middle of the speech, I went mute. I couldn't remember a thing of what I was talking about.
Yeah.
And it was strange, because normally I would not remember right at the beginning, and then it would kick in and I wouldn't have a problem. But this was right in the middle. So when I got, I did remember and I did finish the speech, but when I got off the stage, I thought, what was that about? And what I realized was that I received love from many more than one person when I got up on the stage, and it was embarrassing to me, and that's what caused me to freeze. So positive things can create anxiety also.
Yeah. Well, you might have also gotten in trouble if you got attention at home growing up. If you were special. You know, you probably learned to keep a very low profile, would be my guess.
I can tell you're really good at what you do because you got it. That's true.
40 years adds up.
Okay. So, you know, the time has come around. We're going to have to stop it. What do you want people, from your appearance here today, what do you want our listeners to remember and keep with them about anxiety or anxiety disorders?
That if and when they have anxiety, that they sit down and just take it seriously and take a look at their lives. It's about self-care. Getting over anxiety is about self-care and fixing the things in your life that are harmful to you. I mean, it may seem that you need to stay at work with this job, you have to have this job, but the boss is toxic, and every time you go to work, you have anxiety, and you come home and you don't feel good, and it's just ruining the quality of your life. And I want them to look at their lives and to start self-care, to start doing things that take the toxic, threatening things out of their lives, and also learn healthier coping skills. That's one of the things that people with anxiety need to learn. They're almost always they're deficient in being able to be honest and assertive about their emotions and their desires. They tend to be people pleasers and give and give and give until they haven't got anything left. So they need to learn better coping skills. And that's what I want people to do. I want them to look at this as a problem that's solvable. And not only is it solvable, it will allow them to grow in ways that they need to grow and in ways that will make them a better person.
Wonderful. That's a wonderful message. I really want to thank you, Dr. Victoria, for addressing this ubiquitous human issue, both by working with people in your clinic for so many years and by writing your books and making them so accessible to people who are ready to move on to doing something in their lives besides being anxious. So thank you so much for being my guest here on Full Power Living today. It's been a pleasure having you.
Yes, and I want to thank you for your very provocative questions. I really enjoyed the interview. Thank you.
Great. All right. So let me remind you, as you listen, that Dr. Victoria's website is drvictoria, V-I-C-T-O-R-I-A, Bentley, BENTLEY.com. Her book is The Surprising Causes of Anxiety and Panic, Why You're Not Getting Better After Trying Everything. Next week, listen to Full Power Living as I talk with researcher Chuck Ehrlich about lymphedema and lipedema. They're health problems you may not have heard about, I haven't, but which afflict more than 10 million Americans every year. We'll be right here next Thursday at 9 a.m. Pacific time, so invite friends and family to listen with you, either live or on our archives. And you can also subscribe to Full Power Living on iTunes. We are so grateful to you for being part of our broadcasting family. Full Power Living's producer today is Robin Johnston of Fresh Talk Media. For now, I'm Eileen Dillon, your host, reminding you,
pay attention not to what you want to overcome, but to what you want to become.
To Full Power Living with Eileen Dillon.